Okay, let's dive in. Fish in space. It sounds a bit like science fiction, doesn't it?
It really does.
But get this.
Yeah.
We've actually been sending fish, beyond Earth's atmosphere for decades now.
Yeah, for quite some time.
No little fishy spacesuits involved, just serious science. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're wading into this, fascinating world of space fish tanks and what they're teaching us.
Exactly. And forget that image of just like a lone goldfish floating around. Our exploration today, it's based on articles, reports detailing some really innovative experiments, both past and current ones. They really show why we're sending aquatic life up there and the incredible engineering that makes it all possible. So our mission really is to pull out the key insights for you, why these space aquariums matter, the cleverness behind their design, and what they're revealing about life beyond Earth itself.
And it turns out these finned astronauts are actually super valuable research partners. Model organisms, I think, is the term scientists use.
That's the one. Think of them as biological stand-ins in some ways for humans. We're talking species like mummy chogs, medaka, that's the Japanese rice fish,
Oh, yeah, I heard of those.
and zebrafish too. Very common.
So, why those specific fish? What makes them so special for space?
Well, it's sort of a perfect storm of characteristics, really. They share some basic biology with us, which makes them great for studying things like, bone loss or muscle changes in space. Plus, they're fairly easy to look after. They have fast life cycles, so you can see generations quickly, and some, like the embryos, are transparent.
Transparent. Wow, so you can literally see inside them.
Exactly. It gives researchers a direct window into their development without invasive procedures.
It's pretty useful.
Yeah.
So these little swimmers are helping us tackle some big questions then, like bone density loss, which is a huge issue for astronauts.
A major one, yes. And muscle weakening, too. Also, the effects of space radiation on genes, it's a big concern. And even just the basics of how organisms grow and develop away from Earth's gravity.
And this isn't new, is it? You mentioned past experiments.
Not at all. The very first fish went up way back in 1973, Skylab 3.
Wow, 1973.
Yeah. And the research just kept going on the space shuttle, obviously the International Space Station, the ISS, and now even on China's Tiangong space station.
It really highlights the need for some serious tech innovation, though. Creating a fish tank for zero gravity must be, completely different from one on Earth.
Oh, absolutely. You can't just take your home aquarium up there. Gravity does a lot of work for us down here, keeping water in, waste settling out. Take gravity away, and suddenly you need specialized engineered solutions for, everything.
Okay, speaking of those advanced setups, let's dive into a big one. JAXA, that's the Japanese Space Agency, and their aquatic habitat, the AQH, on the ISS. This thing's been running since 2012, I read.
That's right, since 2012, and it really is a major step up from the earlier stuff, a real leap forward in technology.
So what makes it so special? How does it work?
Well, first off, it's designed as this completely sealed unit. It has to be, right?
Yeah, no spills allowed.
Exactly. It fits into a standard payload rack on the Japanese module, Kibo. Inside, there are two small chambers for the fish, maybe 15 by 7 by 7 centimeters each, roughly.
Okay, pretty compact.
Very. And the whole thing runs on a closed water circulatory system.
Closed loop. So, like you said, no water changes needed way up there.
Pretty much. It's got this incredibly advanced life support built right in. It monitors the water constantly, pH, temperature, oxygen, and it automatically removes waste using a special bacteria filter. Think of it like a tiny, super efficient wastewater plant.
Using bacteria.
That's clever. Yeah, beneficial bacteria break down the fish waste. And this system can keep the water clean for up to 90 days.
90 days. Impressive.
It really is. It also maintains the right pressure, oxygen levels, keeps the temperature stable. It's crucial for long missions, reduces resupply needs. And honestly, this kind of tech has implications for aquaculture back on Earth, too.
I bet. Sounds like the astronauts don't have to spend much time on fish duty then.
Very little. It's highly automated. Feeding is programmed. Even the LED lights mimic day and night cycles. And there are two video cameras sending footage back constantly, so scientists on the ground can watch the fish 247.
What about this air-water interface thing I read about? That sounded interesting. How do they manage that in zero G?
Ah, yeah, that's quite innovative. They were thinking ahead, possibly for future experiments with amphibians, which need both air and water.
Right, frogs or something.
Potentially. So they developed the system using plastic plates and a grid. It essentially traps air bubbles and creates a stable boundary between the air and water, even without gravity pulling the water down.
Huh. Ingenious. So who were the main stars of this high-tech aquatic show? Which fish?
Mostly Medaka, the Japanese rice fish we mentioned.
Okay, why them specifically for the AQH?
Several reasons. We mentioned their transparency already, huge plus. They also breed really fast, even in space conditions.
Wow, they breed up there.
Apparently so. Yeah. And maybe most importantly, their entire genome, their genetic map, is known.
Ah, the Mac genome. That must be incredibly useful for tracking changes, right?
Absolutely essential. It lets researchers pinpoint genetic effects from radiation or microgravity.
So what were the big research questions they tackled with these Medaka?
Well, a major one was bone density loss. They found Medaka lose bone density really fast in space, even faster than humans.
Faster. So they're like an accelerated model for osteoporosis.
Exactly. It helps scientists understand the underlying mechanisms much quicker, potentially finding ways to combat bone loss in astronauts and maybe even osteoporosis here on Earth.
That's incredible. What else?
They also looked at muscle atrophy, muscle weakening. Mm. And of course, with the genome map, studying the detailed effects of space radiation, plus just observing development across generations in space, seeing if they can complete full life cycles.
So these tiny fish are giving us massive insights into human health for long space trips and even aging back home.
Precisely. The AQH findings are directly relevant, especially as we think about going to Mars and just understanding aging better generally.
Okay, let's switch orbits a bit. I also saw news about a more recent experiment, this one on China's Tiangong space station, something about a zebrafish ecosystem.
Ah, yes, that's very current. Launched just this past April 2024 with the Shenzhou 18 crew.
So quite new.
Very new, and it really is aiming for that next level, trying to create a more self-sustaining biological system in space. It's a fascinating step.
Self-sustaining. So it's more than just fish and water this time. What's in the tank?
Right. The core setup involves zebrafish, water, obviously, but also an aquatic plant called hornwort.
Hornwort, okay.
Yeah, the idea is to create this small, closed ecological cycle. The plant produces oxygen, maybe helps process some waste.
Okay.
And the zebrafish live within that little loop.
So the main goal is to see if this mini ecosystem actually works properly in space.
That's the core of it. Studying how these basic aquatic life support cycles function in microgravity and how that environment affects the interactions, the fish's life cycle, everything within that closed system.
Interesting. I've seen pictures, I think. Looked like the tank was divided.
Yeah, reports suggest it's sort of sectioned off with the hornwort in one area and the fish in another. Still working as one system, though.
And zebrafish.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be another favorite for space research. Why them?
Well, much like Medaka, they share a lot of major organs and basic biological processes with us humans. That's key.
Makes sense.
They're small, easy to care for, and again, their embryos are transparent, which is great for observation. Plus, their genetics are really well understood.
Right. Helps track any changes.
Exactly. Makes studying genetic mutations or alterations from the space environment much easier.
Didn't NASA or someone do zebrafish experiments on the ISS before? I feel like I remember something about muscle studies.
Absolutely. Zebrafish were on the ISS back in 2015, I believe. Research focused on muscle atrophy and other physiological effects, definitely.
So China's experiment is building on that, adding the plant, the ecosystem angle.
Precisely. It takes the established zebrafish model and adds that crucial ecosystem dimension. They're looking specifically at the fish-plant interactions in this closed loop under microgravity.
And how are they doing? Any early results?
Early reports sound positive. Apparently, the zebrafish are adapting well to their new orbital home, but it's still early days for that experiment.
Still, it's just amazing to think about the engineering needed for all this. Designing a fish tank for space? It's got to be so different from setting one up here.
Oh, it's a whole different ballgame. You hit on a really critical point there. Microgravity just throws a wrench into everything you take for granted on Earth.
Like just keeping the water in the tank, I guess.
That's the absolute baseline challenge. On Earth, gravity holds the water down. In space, you need a totally sealed system. Robust seals, careful pressure management. Yeah. A leak is not just messy, it's potentially dangerous.
Yeah, water floating around sensitive equipment. Bad news.
Very bad news. And think about trying to contain liquids when they don't naturally pool at the bottom. It fundamentally changes how you handle fluids.
Right. What about the fish themselves? Does floating around mess with them?
It definitely can, especially at first. Fish use gravity partly via their inner ear system, like us, for orientation.
So in microgravity, they often get disoriented. You see them doing loops, tumbling. It can be stressful for them.
Poor fish. Do they get used to it?
They often adapt, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes researchers use light as a kind of up direction cue to help them orient themselves.
Interesting. And the life support you mentioned, the bacteria filter for the AQH. Normal filters wouldn't work.
Not standard aquarium filters, no. Many rely on gravity for water flow or for waste to settle where the filter can get it. In space, you need pumps actively circulating the water.
Right, active circulation.
And the filtration needs to handle waste that's just suspended in the water because it won't settle out. So yeah, things like those specialized bacteria filters and the AQH become really important.
Okay, what about just feeding them? You can't just sprinkle flakes in, right? They go everywhere.
Exactly. Food delivery has to be automated and very controlled. You need systems that dispense the food right where the fish are, or in a way that it doesn't just disperse and foul the water.
Makes sense. And breathing? How do they get oxygen if there's no surface? Good question. Gas exchange is critical. You can't rely on oxygen dissolving from the air at the surface, like in a home tank.
So?
So you need integrated systems, maybe special membranes that let oxygen pass into the water and CO2 out, or control aeration, bubbling gas directly into the sealed environment in a managed way.
Wow. Okay. And waste removal, if solids don't settle.
Yeah, the filtration has to be really good at catching those suspended particles. It's a constant challenge in a closed loop.
And I guess checking on them isn't as simple as just looking through the glass.
Not always practical, and astronaut time is precious. That's why remote observation, those cameras we mentioned, is so vital.
Oh.
And the whole system needs to be designed for minimal hands-on maintenance, too complex and time-consuming otherwise.
That air-water interface for amphibians still sounds tricky.
It is. Creating that stable boundary without gravity is a real engineering puzzle. The AQH grid system is one clever approach to tackling it.
And the whole thing has to survive a rocket launch first.
Let's not forget that. Incredible vibrations, G-forces. The tanks have to be built tough and designed for safe, relatively easy setup once they're in orbit.
It all adds up to these incredibly complex, automated, compact, sealed units. Just
Yeah.
amazing technology.
It really is testament to decades of ingenuity.
So, summing up then, we've definitely figured out how to keep fish alive and well in space, from those early Skylab days to these super advanced habitats on the ISS and now Tiangong.
Yeah, we have. And crucially, these aren't your standard open-top tanks. They're sealed, compact, highly automated units.
Right, with sophisticated life support, closed loops, special filters, automatic feeding, remote monitoring, the works.
Exactly. And while the fish might, do a few loops initially,
Oh, yeah.
they clearly survive and adapt in these specialized environments. And more importantly, they give us invaluable science.
And that science, like we discussed, is key for understanding how spaceflight really affects living things. Bone loss, muscle weakening, genetic changes, even how life develops off Earth.
Couldn't have said it better. It's fundamental research.
And the research keeps pushing forward, doesn't it? Especially with things like the Tiangong ecosystem experiment, trying to build these little self-sustaining worlds.
That's the frontier, really. It's not just about surviving space, but potentially living there long term, understanding the requirements for life beyond Earth. It's foundational work.
Absolutely fascinating stuff. So here's a final thought for you listening. We've seen how these, well, relatively simple fish experiments are actually paving the way for much more complex biology in space, maybe even helping us figure out long-term human settlement someday. It makes you wonder, what other unexpected creatures, what other organisms out there might hold the next crucial keys to our future among the stars?